thank Rabbi Shvartsky very much for the shiur and the insights into the Rambam. And we have about 45 minutes, slightly less, and we'll try to get through a few of the really interesting and important questions that were submitted. They weren't submitted in any particular order, but doing my best in a random order. The first question has to do with Aliyah. Many of our Talmidim come here already very much thinking in the front of their mind, sometimes with even very specific and concrete timelines and plans on making Aliyah. And many others who come here without that necessarily at the front of their mind, but just being in the environment of the yeshiva and Eretz Yisrael, eventually evolve towards thinking about Aliyah in a very serious and meaningful way. So the basic question is Aliyah mandatory? Is it obligatory? Is it just something that's preferable? Are there legitimate excuses not to make Aliyah? Is that the way to look at it? That the default is you make it unless you have a patur not to? Or perhaps are there certain more positive, affirmative reasons why a person might not? What are our obligations to the American or Chutz La'aretz Jewish community? Obviously, every case is different. There's enormous amounts of subjectivity in a lamaisa question for an individual person. But what are some of the general guidelines, halachically, hashkafically, that Talmidim could use to process such a big life decision?
Since, as Rabbi Gottlieb correctly indicated, since the final psak halacha obviously can't emerge out of such a forum, so we can talk about it a little bit. I can't. I'm not qualified to render psak halacha about anything. But again, psak halacha can't emerge. It has to be individualized, so it can't emerge from such a forum anyway. Before one looks to answer the question, we need to try to make sure that we ask the right question. You know, sometimes you can ask a question and in an attempt to understand, but if it's not the right question, it's not gonna get you in. You have to knock on the right door. If you can knock on the door all day, but if you're knocking on the back door and the host told you to knock on the front door and they're only listening for you at the front door, you're not going to get in through the back door. So a question is a way of looking for an entry point to a sugya. You have to ask the right question. If a person asks the wrong question, so then it's not going to get him to the right point in the sugya. So the first thing is to make sure that we ask the right question. So in learning, so the questions are supposed to suggest themselves. The question is suggested by a difficulty we encounter in the Gemara, a difficulty we encounter in Rashi, a difficulty we encounter in the Rambam, a difficulty the Ravid shows us in the Rambam. So that's what prompts the question, which then maybe is an entree to the Havana of a sugya. In this context, it's not as easy, relatively speaking. It's not so easy in the other context either. But here, the importance of the question in terms of Mitzvah Talmud Torah, of how to understand the Shittas Rambam, who doesn't count the Yishuv Eretz Yisrael in his minyan of mitzvahs, the importance of that notwithstanding as a sugi in Torah, as a part of Talmud Torah, when one reads the Ma'amari Chazal, one learns the Ma'amari Chazal at the end of Ksubis, for instance, that the Rambam quotes them in Perek Hei Hilchos Melachim. So does it really make a difference? Is the operative question whether one must live in Eretz Yisrael or whether a person who lives in Eretz Yisrael is chos v'olam haba and kol avo nosav mechulen? I don't know. If someone offers you $10 million, do I have to take it? Am I mavish mechulen today? He's giving you $10 million. Take it. No, take it and go and dow a kollel for your sons and sons-in-law if that's the right thing for them. If it's such a big bracha, I don't know that the operative question is, well, is it mamash achiyav or isn't mamash achiyav? When someone's serving your favorite dessert, so we don't clear is dessert mamash achiyav, is it not mamash achiyav? Okay, maybe that affects when you do or don't make a bracha on dessert. So maybe that does have its place, that question. But lamaisa, in terms of what are you going to eat dessert, If it's your favorite dessert, you're going to eat the dessert. So maybe the operative question is not so much, is it a chiyuv the way the Ramban says, or maybe the Rambam disagrees, and maybe it's only a mitzvah kiyumit, or whatever. But it's hard to understand why the default position wouldn't be that a person would come to Eretz Yisrael unless there are legitimate, compelling reasons that keep him out of Eretz Yisrael. Are there such legitimate, compelling reasons? I hope so. I certainly hope so. the person, has to be honest with himself in terms of whether or not that's why he's in Chutz La'aretz. What are some of those potentially compelling reasons? The Gemara says that you can leave Eretz Yisrael to go to Chutz La'aretz, Lom Mal Torah. Why there are no yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael? Of course there are yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael, but maybe the person that you're going to connect with and the person that you're going to be able to be mekabel from, it's like a shidduch. That's the other thing the Gemara says you can leave Eretz Yisrael for is Lisa Isha. So learning is also a type of they call it a Yerushalmi. I think it's Yerushalmi. The same way you have to have the right doctor, a Talmud needs the right Rebbe. So they're a wonderful, wonderful Rebbein. But maybe for this Talmud, the right Rebbe happens to be in Chutz La'aretz. Lil Motar Velisa Isha, the Gemara talks about leaving Eretz Yisrael. What about the living outside of Eretz Yisrael? I think Rav Shapter quotes very often as the truth of the Maram Shik. The Maram Shik was in Hungary. Maram Shik was from the Gedolei Talmid Chassam Sofer. In those generations, so that there was a big fight against reform, different type of assimilation, and maybe not so different in some respects than we have to deal with today. And the Maram Shik had a Talmud who wanted to leave his Rabbonus in Eretz Yisrael in Chutz La'aretz, and I guess it was in Hungary. I don't know. And I think it was he was offered a Rabbonus in Eretz Yisrael. I'm not sure. And he wanted the Maram Shik to send him a bracha and give him a bracha on his aliyah. And the Maram Shik says, "How can I give you a bracha when you're doing the wrong thing?" He says, "Where you are in your Rabbonus, you're combating reform. You're being mechazik people. You have no right to abandon your post." Soloveitchik used to in different senses present that a person has to be honest with himself what he's doing, what he's not doing. There is a German saying, I've heard to quote this also. It's somewhat biting, but it's true that the graveyard is full of indispensable people. So a person has to be honest about what he is doing and what he isn't doing. None of us are quite as indispensable as we would like to think we are. We're all more dispensable than we think we are. Meidach gisa, there is a metzius that the Maram Shik was describing. So every person has to know what I'm doing. Does that qualify? You know, is that the Maram Shik's tshuva, or is that this rather sharp? Saying which of the two is relevant. Sometimes one is the applicable one, sometimes the other one is the applicable one. A person has to be very honest with himself. If he can, if it's appropriate, he should be misya'et with others as well. If for whatever reason a person can't earn a living in Eretz Yisrael, the Avnei Nezer famously writes in his tshuva, he was asked why the other tzaddikei hadoros who was so makpid on everything and their avodas Hashem, how can it be that all the tzaddikim throughout the doors didn't come to Eretz Yisrael? So he writes it lahalacha. He says, there's no mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael if you're going to be supported from Chutz La'aretz. The mitzvah is to live in Eretz Yisrael if you're going to be if you're going to be supported in if you're going to live and earn one's keep in Eretz Yisrael. There can be compelling family considerations that require a person to live outside of Eretz Yisrael, but it should be on everyone's radar screen, and it shouldn't be out of Hesach Hadas. Why we live in Chutz La'aretz, I don't know, but it should be the case that it's not out of Hesach Hadas.
Shifting gears. As Talmidim, we all came to the yeshiva after the Ketira of Lichtenstein Zatzal. What could you tell us about him, individually and personally, and in what ways was he unique from other Gedolei Yisrael? And in what ways should we be looking to learn from him or follow in his ways, even though unfortunately we'll never have a chance to meet him personally?
It's a very good and sensitive question. I'm going to pass because there are so many people right here in the yeshiva who are much more qualified than I am to speak to that. I think it would be Bevchinas Hedyon HaKofetz Barosh for me to speak about that.
In certain parts of the film community, there is a very strict dress code for men, white and black. And in other parts of the community, obviously, there's a very different perspective, much more focused on freedom of expression. Is one better than the other? Are there, beyond the specific halachos of tznius or other things that might exist, but if we're not discussing black and white, no pun intended, halacha. Are there ideals? What should our perspective be? Are there limits to the freedom of expression, again, other than actual strict halachos? And what should our perspective be on the issue of external versus internal and genuine pnimius?
Before voting for our favorite colors, sometimes we'll just talk a little bit the gadol about the issue, and then we can vote for our favorite colors. Dress is important. The Gemara says in Shabbos it darshens the pasuk v'chibadito me'atzos v'achecha, the pesukim in Yeshayahu, which talk about the chiyuvim midivek kabbalah that a person has on Shabbos. So the Gemara says v'chibadito refers to dressing up for Shabbos, that our standard of dress on Shabbos should be even higher than it is in the week, because the way you accord honor or respect is by the way you dress. Right? Everyone gets dressed up for formal occasions. We go to a wedding, so we don't go into a wedding wearing our regular weekday clothing. You put on a nice suit and you go in more formal attire. Why? Because the occasion demands it. So we all have an intuitive sense that there is significance to dress. Again, if there's nothing inside, so check achen v'avaleyofi. So that goes without saying. But the Gemara says mane mechavdusa. Mane is part of the way a person accords respect. In that vein, when people come to daven, so our dress should reflect what davening is. Davening, al pi halacha, is defined as omed lifnei hamelech, and our dress should, again, not commenting on color schemes now, but just in terms of how we dress, our dress should reflect the fact that we're omed lifnei hamelech. Shabbos is similar. The Rav points out in one of the Yotzei Shurim, you can take a look, the similar description that the Rambam gives for Hachana for Tefillah and Hachana for Shabbos. Rambam describes in Perek Lamed of Hilchos Shabbos that they used to be Mes'ateh b'Talisam, and they'd be Yosei B'Kovid Rosh for Shabbos to come, Ki Yotzei Likras HaMelech. We talk about Shabbos HaMalka, the Rambam has Shabbos HaMelech. It's proper to dress up for Shabbos, not casual. Shabbos is not a day of vacation, it's not a day of casual rest. The way we show and demonstrate chashivas for something, one of the ways we do it, not the only way obviously, but one significant way in which we do it is through dress. The same thing applies to showing respect and chashivas for what we do in life. If we're machshev, as we should be, learning, being in yeshiva, so then that also translates into a certain dressing in a dignified way. It doesn't necessarily mean that you have to show up for night seder tonight with a tuxedo. No, black tie optional. Is that correct? Black tie optional for night seder tonight. So it's not required that you show up for night seder, you know, in hat and tails or whatever it's called, top hat and tails. But the dress should be dignified. It's a very, it's the ultimate dignified endeavor and pursuit to be involved in Talmud Torah, and the dress should reflect that. In the yeshiva world, the way that's been objectified is in the black and white dress. The halacha shabo is the underlying idea and value that yes, there is significance to dress. That clearly, again, that clearly is attested to in halacha, not only in the context of Big Day Kahuna of L'chavad al-Sefaris, but in other contexts in halacha that apply to all of us. It's a way of showing that we're machshev, an event, a person, an endeavor that we're doing. And because of that, dress is important. Sometimes, ironically, sometimes people who want only pnimius make such an issue of the chitonius that they're the ones who are then stressing the chitonius. That happens sometimes, right? Now I'm so focused on the pnimius and I don't like chitonius that I then make an issue of the chitonius and I go around looking different than everyone. That's not being more pnimius, like Adra, but that's calling attention to the chitonius. If when I walk into the Beis Medrash, everyone notices me because I dyed my hair pink for personal expression, so I don't know that shows a stress on pneumius. Adra, but that's, I don't have anything to dye that to, but whatever, imagine. That makes an issue out of the chitzonius. So the important, what's halacha are the values, and I don't know that the halacha translates those values here, again, literally, necessarily into black and white. It doesn't. But me'idach gisa, if you find yourself in such circles, I don't know that there's a mitzvah to stand out. I don't know that there's a mitzvah I b'shita, no, a person doesn't b'shita not wear. A person expresses that value. A person grew up in a society, in a community where that value is expressed in different colors. So matov u'manoim. But there's no mitzvah to necessarily go against the grain. If you decide to go for a zman and learn in the Mir Yeshiva, so there's no mitzvah. Adrav, a person shouldn't be mashanim. Ne'am achokas. A person is supposed to adjust himself and his practice toward the meaning of Mokum. That's what all the Mishnayos in the fourth parak of Psachim are about, that Al Yishanu Adam mitnei HaMachlokes.
In the context of smicha on a karbon, the Gemara has the idea of allowing certain things that might otherwise be permitted, lasos nachas ruach l'nashim. How do we define that term. Is that an actual affirmative value which can impact halacha, or is that just some cover for something else that was going on in the Gemara? And of course, more broadly, what are the limits to that? How can it be applied generally, and if you're willing, specifically?
The questions are all excellent questions. Maybe just to sort of highlight the complexity that one is supposed to be aware of, juxtaposed to that Gemara should be the Braisa and the Toras Kohanim. We know it from the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah in the fourth parak, but it's a Braisa and the Toras Kohanim as a machlokas taka Braisa Micha. The other view is what Rabbi Gottlieb was quoting was the view of Rabbi Yossi, which according to most Rishonim is la halacha, and that is how we conduct ourselves la halacha. The Shagasai says maybe in certain circumstances one should be machmir for Rabbi Yehuda, but we pass on like Rabbi Yehuda. Even the Shagasai just says the Taras Chuma. Rabbi Yehuda says no, that Noshim can't be somchos rishus. So why not? So the different Rishonim have different explanations. So on the Taras Kohanim we have from the Rishonim, we have Perushim from the Rishonim, we have the Rive and we have the Rush, Perushim from the Rishonim. So one of the Perushim in the Rishonim is that we're afraid that if a person volunteers for a mitzvah in which he or she is not chayav, there may be a lackadaisical attitude, and as a result, the person may cut corners, and it may create a distortion of the mitzvah. With or without that additional ma'amokum, again, in this context, the halacha certainly accords with the view of Rabbi Yossi. Whether the response is one of lasas nachas ruach, or whether the response is different, so much of that depends upon societally, not necessarily in the individual case. Please try to notice the words, the caveats, what we'll say. So much of it depends upon what drives the issue societally, if not necessarily individually. Lasos nachas ruach is a response to genuine religious yearning. Lasos nachas ruach isn't a way of trying to reconcile the Torah and Yahadut with alien values and aspirations of the secular world around us. Lasos nachas ruach isn't a way to give in to pressure when there's an agenda of egalitarianism, when there's a rejection of the Torah's clear differentiation of gender roles. Whatever all that men and women have in common in Avodas Hashem notwithstanding, and obviously there's a tremendous amount they have in common, there are also areas where the paths are supposed to diverge, and the Torah clearly has gender roles. Whether the answer, whether the response of the Chachmei Hador is supposed to be Lasas Nachas Ruach, and we should be bending over backwards to help facilitate and accommodate, or whether the response is to resist and to teach correct, pure Torah values, so much of that depends upon the context, it depends upon motivation, it depends on what's happening. What makes the situation even more tragic than it is the fact that, again, because one has to look at the broader societal picture and can't just look at the individual, that sometimes, yes, an individual has to be turned away because of knowing what that's going to be co-opted into, because of knowing what, for other people, that represents in terms of the agenda that they attach to it. You can have two people, one of whom intends something very purely, and one of whom does not. And yes, Hashem Yerulaleva, but sometimes people tell you openly what's in their hearts, in which case we also know what's driving things. And unfortunately, the ones who suffer the most from the people who are constantly pushing and trying to not just trying to change the boundaries, the ones who suffer the most from it are the person who have genuine, pure aspirations, because they make certain things impossible they poison the waters sometimes. So I think that's the general nachas ruach is a response to pure religious yearning and aspiration. It's not a way of trying to come up with a halakhically sanctioned compromise or diverging from what the Torah says is correct, or Torah values, or of compromising with. We're not supposed to compromise with the world. We're supposed to learn what the Torah tells us to think. We're not supposed to try to make the Torah fit the whatever values we absorb from the outside world. We're supposed to try to cleanse our minds and hearts. V'hoyer einenu v'sarah sacha. And then, v'dabek livenu b'mitzvah sacha. First, there has to be a v'hoyer einenu b'sarah sacha.
Most of our day is spent learning Gemara, like all other yeshivas. So simply, why? Why is there such a disproportionate focus on Gemara? And specifically, there's two, I'd say ironic, but potentially different, almost opposite focuses that we have in this yeshiva. On the one hand, there's a tremendous focus on Limud B'Iyun. And on the other hand, perhaps more than any other yeshiva, there's an openness to learning other areas of Torah, such as Tanakh in particular, and Machshava. So, as a kind of multi-part question, why is there such a focus on Gemara per se, as opposed to other areas of Torah? What is the value in those other areas of Torah relative to Gemara? And then, specifically, if possible, also within Gemara, how should one, broadly speaking, prioritize or balance Limud B'Kiyus, Limud B'Iyun, and Limud Hechusa?
Again, the bottom line of all these questions has to be individualized. So we can't presume to bring it to that level. Maybe just to offer what some of the considerations are and what some of the perspectives are. Chazal say, maybe to Gemara in Gittin, that Lo Kos HaKadosh Baruch Hu Brisim Yisrael El B'Shvil Dvarim Shebal Peh, Torah Shebal Peh. Even though we divide Torah into Torah Shebal Seh and Torah Shebal Peh, but the Bris that HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ki Al Pi HaDvarim HaEle, the Gemara Darshan is the Pasuk, Ki Al Pi HaDvarim HaEle Karati Itcha Bris Ves Yisrael. That the Bris that HaKadosh Baruch Hu established with us is for Torah Shebal Peh. Torah Shebichtav is something which, on the contrary, the Torah made available to the Ummah Sa'olam. The Torah was written, B'Shivim L'Shamas, Ba'er Heite, there was a mitzvah to write the Torah on the stones when they crossed over the Yarden, B'Shivim L'Shamas. The reason, we won't digress. So, It's for that reason that's one of the reasons that again, and Torah Shebal Peh, obviously the Iker is Gemara. A person doesn't this is not intended as a disincentive to learning Mishnayos, but obviously a person understands Mishnayos, Al Pi Gemara. Torah Shebal Peh means Gemara, and Lokar Tachadosh Baruch Hu Brisim Yisrael El Bishul Dorim Shebal Peh. That's one perspective. Another perspective. In terms of machshava, there are different part of the richness of Torah is that there are differences. Obviously, the Ramban's machshava is not synonymous with the Ramban's machshava, and neither of those are synonymous with the Maharal or Ramchal. But what everyone has in common is halacha. So halacha is is what's ma'ached all legitimate, necessary, not necessarily sufficient, but the halacha is what's ma'ached all legitimate streams and within Torah. Gemara halacha, that preoccupation, that hisaskus. Ideally, what learning Gemara should be there's a Mishnah in the first paragraph of Aegis where the Mishnah asks, given the fact that Yachid V'Rabim Halacha K'Rabim, so why do the Mishnayos record the Divrei HaYachid? That strikes us as such a strange question. What do you mean? We spend time, we talk about Bishamai, Bishillel, we're not interested only in the views which are the Halacha. And the Mishnah Aegis, no, the Mishnah Aegis is bothered. Mishnah Aegis is bothered with the Kasha. Why are the Divrei HaYachid recorded in the Mishnah? So it's clear that Mishnah was intended as a Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. When Rabbeinu HaKadosh compiled the Mishnayos, it was intended as a Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. And a Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, Beis Shammai, does not get too much shelf space in a Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. A Kitzur Shulchan Aruch is supposed to tell you what's the halacha. Now juxtapose that to the fact there are sugyas in Shas where the Rishonim say that the Shakla V'Tariya and the Gemara was based on a misunderstanding. That when one Amora asked a Kasha on another Amora, so he misunderstood what that Amora had said. But I would have thought, so Eba Zoi, why is that in the Gemara? So let's edit that out. So clearly, Avada, learning Gemara results in Halacha L'Maisa. It's the only way the Poskim can get to Halacha L'Maisa, and it's the only way we can fully, deeply understand what the Poskim say. But L'Maisa, what Ravina and Ravashi set out to do was different, fundamentally different, than what Ravina and Akoda set out to do. Ravina and Ravashi set out to bring us into the Beis Medrash of Amorai. Ravina Ravashi set out not just to teach us the conclusions that Rav Huna and Rav Nachman arrived at, but to bring us into the Beis Medrash, to give us a back seat, a back bench seat in Beis Medrashim, shall Rav Nachman and Rav Huna, shall Rav Yochanan, shall Reish Lakish, shall Abaye and Rava. It brings us into the Beis Medrash. Bring us into the Beis Medrash, and it's going to be uncensored, unedited. If there was a misunderstanding in the Beis Medrash, you're gonna be given that also, because that's what learning Gemara does. It brings you into Beis Medrashim, Shel Chachmei HaMasorah. That's what we're supposed to get out of learning Gemara. I mean, the halacha is pretty clear that there's supposed to be a din kedima for learning halacha l'maisa. Learning halacha l'maisa doesn't really entail compromising on any of these things we've been talking about, because the real way to learn halacha l'maisa is to begin from the Gemara, with the Rishonim, through the Shulchan Aruch, down to the Achronei Poskim. That's what the Vilna Gaon reminded the world, that the way to learn halacha is not backwards, not from the Shulchan Aruch and the Beis Yosef, And the Gemara is a source quoted in the Beis Yosef. No, the Beis Yosef is a source commenting on and reacting to the Gemara. So really, the way a person should learn halacha l'maaseh, a person is learning Bishul and Shabbos. So he sits and he learns Parakira, and he learns the relevant sugyas later in Shabbos, and he learns them the same way he'd learn the sugya of Isha Mishum Chitza, Isha Mishum Amamo. He doesn't learn the sugya any differently. The difference is, again, he traces it down with the help of the Shulchan Aruch, the Beis Yosef, down to the Mishnah Berurah, down to the Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa. He traces it down to the halacha l'maaseh. So in terms of the there's no compromise on Iyun, and given that fact, why do yeshivas disproportionately learn Nashim and Nezikin, and even those parts of Nashim and Nezikin are not necessarily learned so much halacha l'maaseh? So I guess shtei tshuvas badava, neither of which are intended to discourage people from trying to follow that din kedima. Number one is that at a certain point, this is a little circular, but at a certain point we just have more to work with in Nashim and Nezikin, meaning in yeshivas there's no tzelf and nesivas in Seder Moed. There's no okay, so in the Nashim Masechta, so there's Avnei Milurim, the Ksuf is Avnei Milurim. So we have more to work with. And when they're trying to train Talmidim, so they want to be able to expose them to the Ksuf, to the Nesivis, to the Tumim, etc. And we don't have that wealth in Seder Moed, and certainly not in Seder Kodshin. L'maisa, again, that notwithstanding, a person has to figure out how to reconcile this with making the most of the yeshiva he's in and what the yeshiva is offering him. But l'maisa, we shouldn't lose sight of the fact that it does have a din kedima, that those parts of Torah which are halacha l'maisa do have a din kedima. Just very briefly, in terms of Tanakh, there is a cryptic Rashi in Brachos with which you're familiar. The question is what the Rashi means. The Gemara says, who was it when one of the Tanoim was dying? So one of the last pieces of advice he gives his Talmidim, literally on his deathbed, is Minu Benecha Min Hahigoyim. Rashi has one pshat that it means Al Tagilim B'Mikro Yoseh Midai. Seems like a person's Iker, his Askus, his main preoccupation, again, as we said before, should be Tarsha Balteh, not Tarsha Bukhtav. Does that explain why we're so ignorant of Tarsha Balteh? No. Is that what it means? No. But it does say that the Iker Hesaskos should be Tarsha Balteh, not Tarsha Bukhtav. But it's also very important to recognize that there's no such thing as being an expert in Tarsha Bukhtav and being ignorant in Tarsha Balteh. A person can be expert in different areas of Torah. So the Gedolim are experts all over. They're experts across the board. There is such a thing as a person has a special bekiyas in Hilchos Eruvin, and he has a special bekiyas in Hilchos Rebus in business law, and he has an expertise in Hilchos Ishus. Avada, there is such a thing. But that can't be, a person can't be an expert in one area and just totally and ignorant in other areas. Torah is miksha achas. There's a certain approach to learning halacha that a person gains from being exposed, learning a lot all over. A person has that general background, he can be an expert in one area. Similarly, there's no such thing as learning Torah Shavuchsav not through the lens of Torah Shavuchsav. There may or may not be a Gemara on this pasuk, But the lens for Torah Shebichtav is always Torah Shebal Peh. Again, if you have a Chazal, so then the project is to understand what Chazal said about it. If there's no Chazal, okay, so then one has to be creative and figure out, so what is there in Torah Shebal Peh that can be applied, that can be used to help me gain insight into the Torah Shebichtav. The Torah Shebichtav isn't an independent area of expertise. We don't believe that the Torah Shebichtav can be separated from Torah Shebal Peh. Torah Shebichtav was given to be understood al pi the Torah Shebal Peh. It's not that there's a Torah Shebichtav, there's history and then there's biology. There's Torah Shebichtav. No, Torah Shebichtav is given to be understood al pi Torah Shebal Peh. You open the classic. Works in recent centuries, you open a Meshech Chochma, you open a Malbim, and you see what it means to be creative in understanding Torah Shebichtav al pi Torah Shebal Peh.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Tversky.
Can you hand it?
No.